Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Crossing the highway late last night, you should have looked left and it should have looked right. He didn't see the station wagon car, the skunk got squashed, and there you are. You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Stinking to high heaven.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Heather's entertaining herself because she's looking at the little slideshow on MikeNovak.net on the homepage of our trip down the Chicago River, North Branch, yesterday, with friends of the Chicago River and Leinenkugels. We got a little video embedded in there. And
Wasn't I doing all the work here?
Yes, you
were.
You were
sitting there taping.
Made for a seven-year-old.
Try not to... Collision course, collision. Dive.
We had fun, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was good.
Heather, you're really good at this. I'm. Oh, yeah. In a light of Google's.
In a light of Google canoe, coincidentally enough. Yes,
coincidentally enough. And there's our fellow passengers on the river.
If you go to the website, MikeNovak.net, you'll see this little video.
Right in the middle of the homepage.
Well, I suppose we need an explanation of some of the flora.
Isn't that your area of expertise?
Hey, listen, I better paddle. I got to turn this off.
Can't you identify plants by sight at this point?
Nope, I cannot at all. Wow, I'm a hit. Oh, that's what's going on here. Let's turn that off.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was great fun.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful day.
It was.
What a great event. And the thing, we're going to talk to Jake Leinenkugel a little bit later in this half hour. And I hope he survived. We all had a great time. If you go to MikeNovak.net, you'll see the slideshow that we put together of the... Canoes for a Cause friendly float on the Chicago River. Now, the reason I played Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road, because we're paddling down the river.
Yes.
And there are a couple of little... You don't actually... wasn't that stinky. It was just that...
There were a few patches that had a strong odor.
I didn't really even notice much of an odor, but there were some things floating on the river. And I quote both Jake Leinenkugel and Friends of the River... executive director, Margaret Frisbee, on my website this morning if you go to this week's show. And Margaret's comment was, wow, river hasn't looked that bad in years. And Jake said, this river needs a lot of help.
Yep.
And it's true, and that's why if you go to the Leinenkugel's Facebook page, you can click on their like, and money will go to Friends of the Chicago River. But what I'm going to ask him later on is, you know, what is the business model for this? Besides a big company, which makes a great beer, by the way, and we had a couple of those after the event yesterday.
Yes. Oh, did they treat us nice or what?
That the whole setup was just beautiful.
Oh.
But I want to know what the business model is for that. When a big company gets behind cleaning up a river, how do they make that happen, especially since you've already got government agencies and you've got other NGOs pushing it, and you know, you've got the EPA mandating cleanup, and you've got the MWRD, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, voting to do that. Where does a private company play a role? Excuse me.
That's acceptable. It's okay. You're only human.
Just swallow my tongue. All right.
It's
a good way to start a Sunday, isn't it?
If only.
You know, I'm still in the big chair, you know.
I know you are. But you don't have that paddle to wield behind me any longer.
That's why you were sitting in front, so I could be behind you and whack you upside the head if I needed to at any given time.
All I know is we'd be going at a nice rate there, and all of a sudden something would catch your eye and you'd want to take photos or video, and it got really hard to paddle all of a sudden. I'm like, why do my arms hurt so much today?
By the way, do you feel buff this morning?
I do.
I have shoulders of steel.
Yeah, like
this morning.
Right in the top here where the neck meets the shoulder. But tomorrow that's going to be exceptionally sore. And I'm going to need a masseuse.
So we're going to get Allison Cisneros on the phone in just a second, too. She is the volunteer coordinator with Medewin Tallgrass, National Tallgrass Prairie, down in Wilmington, Illinois. What a great place. If you've never been there, you need to go. And what they're doing is they got 10,000 plugs of native plants that they need to get into the ground. And they're going to do this next week, and I'm going to talk to Allison about that. As I said, Jake Leinenkugel, Rick DeMille Weather is here. Rick DeMille sent me all this stuff, half of which I haven't had a chance to look at. He's like, he sends me websites and websites and websites. Oh, you got to see this. This is really cool. Okay, Rick, I'll get to it eventually. Bill Aldrich, who is the founder and the first publisher of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, as you know, they're a great sponsor on this show. I write for them. And he is the guy who hired me to work for there, although he doesn't publish it anymore. But he's always great fun. He's coming into the studio. And then we are going to get Dan Costa on the line. Now, you might hear, when you listen to the show, Dan Costa calls in all the time from Vern Goer's greenhouse. I always want to say nursery. Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale. Very knowledgeable guy. We're going to give some vegetable tips because there's been some things going on this season that are a little odd. And I've gotten emails, and last week you heard us talking to Robert Neville from KAM, Isaiah Israel, on the south side. And we talked about cucumbers and how slow they were. And we got a tip this week about that. And I want to talk about tomatoes. And how are your tomatoes looking? And none of this is code. It's all real. It's real vegetables. So Dan Costa will be here also to talk about that. He'll be on the phone. But he's also a member of the Prairie State Bonsai Society, and they're having their big annual show at the Morton Arboretum next week. So all that on the show. Always your phone calls welcome, especially second hour. Going to be taking a lot of gardening questions, 773-838-9278. Tweet us, Facebook us.
At Mike Now is the Twitter.
Mike Now is the Twitter.
And you can like us on the Facebook at the Mike Novak Show fan page.
My favorite Twitter of the morning so far is from, I don't know if it's Kari or Carrie Dale. Kari or Carrie. But we mentioned Lina Kugels, and her tweet is, "And suddenly my husband is interested in the Mike Novak Show."
Jake Leinenkugel is on.
Yeah, you know, your husband's a stereotype.
No, he's not. He's just a guy. Most guys, regular guys.
I happen to know a woman sitting in this room who happens to like a brewski, too.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. All right, let's get to the phone, and we're going out, actually, to near the Grand Canyon to bring in Allison Cisneros, who's the volunteer coordinator at Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie. Allison, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Okay, you're going to see the Grand Canyon this morning, aren't you?
Well, our the company canceled on us last minute, but we're considering driving out there, yeah.
Why? Why did they cancel?
Weather conditions. I'm not really sure what that means because it's really looking beautiful now, but I'm sure they know best.
Is there a threat of fire or is
that
it?
That crossed my mind. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because it's been terribly dry. Although I heard Tom Skilling say the other day that it's monsoon season there, too. So I, you know, got to wonder exactly what's going on. Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, if you go, I'm sure you're going to have a great time. I'm sorry.
Sure. Well, even if I stay here, I'm sitting here looking at the beautiful strip of Las Vegas. So.
Woohoo! You know what they say, and I'm not even going to say it. Allison, I'm so happy to talk to you because you sent me a notice the other week, and I thought, hey, this is really interesting, and I want my listeners to know about this. And a number of my listeners, you know, we've got a lot of folks down south of Chicago who listen to 99.9 FM, Joliet Way. I know we have folks. You work at Madewin, which used to be called the Joliet Arsenal.
That's what it used to be known as, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the old-timers still talk about it. I bet you get a lot of folks in there who go, oh, yeah, it's the old Joliet Arsenal.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have connections to that area.
And I imagine a lot of people don't even know how to pronounce Madewin, so they call it Joliet Arsenal. And I've been down there, and there's still a lot of remnants of it. I mean, it's kind of eerie. The bunkers and the fencing and just other things left over from the arsenal days. What's amazing is how it was signed into law in 1996 by President Clinton to create a national tall grass prairie. Now, I don't believe that had ever been done before, had it?
We're the first national tall grass prairie. So, yes, we're managed by the United States Forest Service.
And it's almost 20,000 acres. In what, you know, this is the prairie state, so we're bringing the prairie back to the prairie state.
Right, yeah, 32 square miles.
But what I don't think people get is that when you recreate a prairie, you don't just throw a bunch of seed down and walk away and come back in a few years and then, you know, say, hey, we've got a prairie. Explain a little bit how that works, Allison.
Well, first of all, actually, Madewin is a Potawatomi word that means healing, as in healing society. So, you know, as the landscape has been dramatically altered through tilling and draining wetlands and, you know, of course, the Army ammunition plant there, you know, it's changed.
Hey, Allison, Allison, you just went muffled a little bit. Are you, how are you holding the phone there?
Oh, can you hear me now?
That's better, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I was just saying the landscape has been dramatically altered, and so what, you know, took just maybe a short few decades to alter is going to take a couple hundred, if not more, years to restore. And I'm talking about restoration as in not just growing wildflowers, but really where all the ecosystems are intact, where you've got all your bacterial and fungus populations in the soil, and you've got your whole web of life. As far as insects and pollinators and birds and all sorts of wildlife coming together.
Yeah, you know, that's part of the interesting thing that people like. It's like working on Mount Rushmore or the Crazy Horse Monument out in the Dakotas. People who do this know they'll never live to see it done. You know, and you're talking 50 years, 100 years into the future, and you're just starting it now. That's awe-inspiring, and it really shows the dedication of the people who work there. Now, a lot of your workers are volunteers, and that's where the 10,000 plugs come in, right?
Right.
So?
Yeah, even though it's going to take a long time to restore, I mean, we see changes every day. And especially with the help of our really dedicated volunteer staff. So. And this work day is part of it. The 10,000 wildflowers, we were grateful enough to get a grant through the National Forest Foundation, and they're ready to get in the ground quickly.
How much time do you have to spare to get those in? I imagine they're kind of tender and sensitive.
Well, we would just like to get them in the soil where they're protected rather than in their plastic plug trays.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a lot of helping hands to do that, and that's the main purpose of this call is I really wanted to invite people out to help us do that.
All right, and you're doing it next Saturday, July 16th, Sunday, but only if you're rained out on the 16th, right?
Right.
But then again, Monday the 18th and Tuesday the 19th. And you'll basically take anybody above the age of 7 who can handle a trowel?
Sure, yep.
Yeah.
It's a great family activity.
You know, that would be. Can you imagine telling your kids, coming back years later, and say, hey, we helped plant that prairie?
Yeah, that's the really special part about it, is it's also in a really accessible area, so it's going to be easy for everybody to come back and see the fruits of our labor, literally. So it's right next to a trail called the Prairie Creek Woods Loop, which is a great trail. It's adjacent to a 500-acre prairie restoration, and it's also next to our largest bur oak tree on site. So it's a really great site, so it'll be wonderful for people to come back year after year and see what they've helped with.
Can you quickly tell me what kind of plants you've got there?
Sure. We've got things like grasses like prairie drop seed. We've got black-eyed Susans, prairie dock, rattlesnake master, prairie clovers, bottle gentian. So a lot of really great things.
Yeah, those are wonderful plants.
A lot of colorful flowers.
Yeah. Now, if folks want to get involved, what I'd advise them is if they're listening to this show, probably the easiest thing to do is go to my website, MikeNovak.net, because I've got all the links there. I've got the link to Medewin. I've got the link to the volunteer page. I've got the RSV to Gemma Gunther. Is that still who we're responding to?
That's the assistant volunteer coordinator, Gemma Genther.
Gemma Genther, which I was close.
Yeah, you are.
And her number is 815-423-2148. What, are you laughing at a phone number?
Yeah, well, first it sounded like you. It's like her number is. It almost sounded like you were giving out her phone number, but I know it's for the organization. But.
No, it's the organization.
Yes,
813-2148. Or G. Genther, and that's G-G-U-E-N-T-H-E-R at fs.fed.us. And like I said, nobody's going to remember that. So go to my webpage, and all the links are there, including I linked that map that you sent me for directions on where to get to the site.
Oh, good. Yeah, we're starting at 9 a.m. at the River Road Seedbed.
So, folks, if you want to do your mitzvah for the week, get a hold of Medewin, National Tallgrass Prairie, Gemma or Allison. And, of course, you're going to be back in time for this next week, I assume, Allison.
Oh, yes. I'll be back on Wednesday.
And it's going to be a great several days of planting for a great cause. Imagine your grandchildren, taking your grandchildren out there and saying, hey, I put this prairie in, or I helped put this prairie in. It's such a fabulous site and has so much promise, and I'm just rooting for you and hope you get enough people out there.
Oh, thank you so much for this opportunity. This is great for the volunteer program.
And Allison, I hope you get to see the Grand Canyon today.
Okay, me too. Thank you.
Take care. We'll talk real soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In just a second. Oh, look, you've got him there already. My microphone's falling apart here. We will be talking to Jake Leinenkugel. You might have heard of him before. You might have heard of him actually in a commercial or two somewhere along the way. He's standing by. We're going to talk about the Chicago River and what we saw yesterday on the big canoe trip. Well, summer is here. And if you've been waiting for the big sales to put the finishing touches on your summer garden, look no further than SIDS. During their summer dot sale clearance through July 16th, save 30% to 70% off a great selection of items as they clear out spring and summer merchandise. Now, here's some of the examples of the savings you'll find. 30% off all arbors, trellises, statuary, fountains, gazing balls, annuals, rose bushes, pine and spruce trees, and more. Save 50% off all ornamental grasses, annual flats, outdoor canvas art, seed starting, and light gardening supplies, and more. Save 70% from remaining fruit trees, lotus bird feeders and houses, select perennials, nursery stock, and more. The selection of items varies by store, and it's limited to stock on hand. SID's Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard and on the web at sidsonline.com. Remember, too, that as you're cleaning up around the garage and shed, scoop up all those plastic pots, trays, and cell packs and bring them to SID's for recycling.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
That's why we drink it here. And when we're gone from here, all our friends will be drinking all our beer. La la
la la la
la la.
See, I'm betting this is a song that Jake Leinenkugel has never heard before.
Oh,
so
I don't know. I think he's been around beer for a few generations.
And he's online too right now. Hey, how you doing, Jake?
Well, it's definitely one of my favorite morning wake-up songs, I can tell you that. I'll tell you, Jake is a little stiff and a little sore, and I always thought I was in pretty darn good shape, but we got tested yesterday, didn't we?
Absolutely. You know what? The first thing I have to say out of the gate is about that. Here you had a bunch of people on the river, over 150 canoes, and was it 150 people or 150 canoes?
150 people.
150 people.
75 canoes.
Okay, 75 canoes. And I'm betting a lot of them were amateurs.
It's kind of obvious on some.
I know my partner, Jim Doney, was an amateur. He's our local distributor for downtown Chicago area, and he's a great guy. Knows Chicago like the back of his hand. I said, Jim, you ever been in a canoe? He goes, nope.
Well, and I haven't been in one at least 15 years, and Heather has been a while. And we were talking before you came on the air how, you know, we're feeling pretty buff this morning, a little sore. But, you know, but so once we got going, when it started, it's really fun. You're going, wow, this is fun. We're paddling down the river. And by the way, Jake, I hope you go to my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got a little I got two videos up there, one of you and me. At Dick's Last Resort, talking about the effort, and then I've got one that we put together of Heather and me on the river. And part of the problem was Heather was in front, I was in back, and I would just put down the paddle every once in a while and start taking pictures. And Heather couldn't figure out why it was suddenly so hard to paddle.
It got really hard.
You guys were passing us, and I heard Heather make that comment a couple of times while you were taking
some
good
pictures.
Stop taking
pictures.
You know what? If I had kept paddling the whole time, we'd be in Muskegon right now.
Right?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the learnings Mike and Heather definitely for everybody that was on that float was the quality of the water and the state of the water of a great river system that needs to be fixed. And secondly, the wonderful architecture that you see while you are on the Chicago River, and especially in a canoe. I mean, you could just put your paddles up like we did multiple times, and you just look around. And you see things that you've never seen from a different perspective before. So, you know, this has got to become an annual event just for the sake of awareness to get more people involved in, I think, what is just a great cause, and that is to clean up a terrific river system around one of the world-class cities in America that, you know, quite rightly needs to be cleaned up and in a better state for so many different things like we did yesterday, because look at how many kayakers we passed.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yep, that are out there in the Chicago River, many for the first time just enjoying the sight, and then they see the water quality.
There were,
and in some cases, Mike and Heather smell it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we smelled it.
There were, counting us, there were hundreds of boats in the river yesterday. Now, it did help that it was one of the nicest days of the summer. But to hear the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District say, no, we really don't want people in the river because something bad might happen. Well, they're already doing it. They're already there. Mm-hmm. So your job is just to clean it up. And now, see, that takes me to the question that I asked earlier on the show, which is, I understand what you're doing, partnering with Friends of the Chicago River, which is a great organization. And Margaret Frisbee was there, and she was on the show last week. And just to let folks know, if you go to Line and Kugel Facebook page and you like them, hit the like button, and money will go to Friends of the Chicago River. Now, that was supposed to end yesterday, that campaign, but I understand you guys have extended it through the end of the month.
We have, and the reason for that is I just think from yesterday's float, the awareness factor increased multifold, and we're going to see a lot more people talk to their friends. And we're willing to commit some dollars just to support the Friends of the Chicago River,
mm-hmm.
To get the awareness factor out there. We're not going to be able to clean this river system up overnight. We know that. But to get more people involved like we did yesterday, get a firsthand view of a great river system in one of America's top cities, if not the world, and say that over time, we can make this a very attractive river system in one of the neatest cities in America.
Well, okay, that takes me to what is the business model for this? Because, you know, you're a company with a great product. I know that you're supporting Friends of the Chicago River, which is an advocacy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the business model? Is that the way that you worked in Minnesota and Wisconsin to help clean up other rivers? I'm trying to figure out how your company gets hands-on with this, or is it that you just support it and let the powers that be do the actual cleanup?
We actually do both, and it's a very good question, Mike, because you have to do both rather than just, you know, try to make awareness through, you know, donations and money. That's all well and good and very necessary, by the way. But the company, Line and Kugel's, has a group of people that this is what we believe. This is a core value of ours. Going back to our great-great-grandfather, who knew the importance of water, first of all, just water in general, because our product is 92% water. So whether it's groundwater, which is essential for our livelihood, but certainly the aesthetics, because we built a brewery around water, we are cleaning up everything around our brewery in regards to not only all the environmental aesthetics, but also the effluent that we did put into the water systems over the past 50 years, because we would have runoff. We would have a lot of cleaners that would run off into the system. And I can tell you over the last decade, we have cleaned up over 90% of what our effluent runoff is. Plus, we are today saving 20 million gallons of water per year, 20 million gallons of water, compared to what we used 3 years ago.
I saw that. Now, how is it that you accomplished that?
Well, we use a lot of reclamation water now through our pasteurization of our beer, our cleaning. There is no effluent water that goes into the city sewer system. Everything is reclaimed on-site at the brewery. And for a little company to do that, that's quite a thing. But when it just goes to show you, if you put your mind to it, you can do anything. When you have a lot of committed people, because it takes a little bit of everybody and every department. So what we like to do besides advocate is say we have a working model to your term that can work. And when you take it outside to creeks, like we did with our creek outside our brewery, Duncan Creek, with another group, the Friends of Duncan Creek, we have cleaned that up over the last 17 years where it is cleaner today than it was when I was a little kid when I played in it. And everybody around Chippewa Falls knows that is now a Class A trout stream throughout the Chippewa Falls area all the way up 60 miles north of Bloomer, Wisconsin. So that's point number one that we can attest is factual. It works. Point two is Minnehaha Creek in Minneapolis. It's 100 miles away. We got behind that with our distributor in that market to make awareness. And then we go over and we clean up the creek, but we also watch what the runoff factor is into it. We've built a lot of buffers and barriers over the last 6 years. It's working. And so there's another thing, and now we've tackled two big ones. One is our local lake, which is a high recreation lake, a great water system with two rivers, the Chippewa River and Yellow River, just 6 miles outside of Chippewa, that flow into it. And this is going to be a couple-decade-long project, very similar to working with the Friends of the Chicago River and the cleanup of the Chicago River. It's going to take awareness, what is the issue and the problems, which basically is phosphate run in to the river system. And we can build a lot of barriers, but it's going to take a long time and work with a lot of partners and farmers. Also some private citizens that probably have their lawns too close to the lake.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. We're talking to Jake Leinenkugel from Leinenkugel's Beer, and you talked about phosphate runoff. What about, and I don't want to get too geeky on you here, but nitrogen runoff as well, because I know that a lot of these nutrients get into the river, nitrogen and phosphorus, and they cause algae blooms.
Well, you have a good point. That was going to be my second one, was the nitrate factor, because we tested out our lake, and it is actually over what the EPA nitrate level runoff should be.
Well, and
you got the double whammy, Mike, going
yeah,
right now.
Exactly. and that goes, if you've got a waterway that's connected to the Mississippi, it goes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, and it creates a dead zone down there. But it can do it in your own lake. And what I tell folks who have lawns, and they live on lakes, and they want to have that lawn right up to the edge of the lake. Well, guess where all the nitrates go when you fertilize?
Right.
It runs right into the lake. So you need to have a buffer zone of plants that will absorb that and will stop that runoff, keep the phosphorus and the nitrogen from going into the lake, and you're going to have a much better lake.
You're absolutely right, and that's the awareness education thing that we're doing around Lake Wissota right now, and trust me, it works, and I can attest to that. But you do a 20 to 30-foot buffer, which actually looks much better than a lawn that goes all the way to the start of the lake, because you can use wild grasses, which are very cool, a lot of native shrubs and plants. And we've already targeted some areas. We've already impacted some of those places. And, again, it's over time. It's awareness. But it starts to snowball. And I think it'll be something over the next 5 years would be a good target point to continue doing what we did yesterday, building the awareness around the Chicago River, because you saw the amount of young people there outside of myself. But young people who were generally, very concerned, and especially after they canoed it.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was the thing that really surprised me, because I had not canoed the Chicago River before, and I've talked about it on the show, and I know people who are out there kayaking, and my meteorologist who's coming up, Rick DeMaio, in fact, let's get him on the phone, and he kayaks, and so I hear from what they say, which is, yeah, it's not clean, but we're not afraid for our lives. On the other hand, we went out on the river yesterday, and some of us, like you, like Margaret, were kind of surprised at how dirty it was yesterday.
Yeah, very surprised. I figured that it would be, with just some of the runoff and, when you get a little bit of rain and everything, you do get any river system, which becomes what's called muddied up a little bit. But this was beyond muddied up.
Yeah.
So I think everybody said that. I mean, everybody that floated from an awareness factor was very surprised, to your point, Mike.
And that's why we need to continue this work, and that's why I'm so happy that we are finally going to have disinfection for the river, which is going to help a great deal. But we need groups like Friends of the Chicago River. We need companies like yours to get on board, and I'm so grateful that you have done that. And as you said, you're going to try to make this a regular event.
Yeah, and, we can't do it by ourselves. We're just a very small company. But I would love to see by next year 10 large companies that really say, you know what, we get this. We need to become very active and become advocates along with the Friends of the Chicago River, because you have the right group down there with great people. When we did the cleanup back in May, they had over 4,000 people that they activated from the Friends of the Chicago River. So you know, our group is very small, but we're bringing in distributors. So, you know, you saw yesterday a couple of hundred of our beer people were on site for this. And now they're fans. They're aware. And like you said, we can commit money. We do have money set aside because Chicago was one of our main market areas. It was our first market area outside of Wisconsin that we brought our beer to because of those very intrigued consumers of Chicago that would come north to Wisconsin and say, what's this wonderful beer, and I can't get it down here. So we brought it to them, and now we want to give back to a great city and try to help a terrific organization like the Friends of the Chicago River.
Well, you got one of your biggest fans right here in the studio because Heather Fry, my producer, of course, her family has a cabin up in Wisconsin, and they've been drinking Line of Kugels forever.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was great seeing Heather and you yesterday, Mike, I'll tell you. But I do know this, and I was watching. Heather did a lot of paddling yesterday.
And I enjoyed an ice-cold Leinenkugel when it was over, which made it so worth
That's right, and she was rewarded for it, Jake.
I was.
Okay?
It was Jake that rewarded me, not you.
the people at Dick's Last Resort did a wonderful job. I mean, we had a huge full breakfast for everybody, you know, before we did the float. It was so well organized by our staff and their staff. And we had safety along the way, as you probably have already stated. You know,
yeah.
We had safety boats out there. We had water for people. We had little energy bars. And then we made sure that there was enough safety people and everybody wore their vests.
Oh, wait a
second.
And
everybody watched everybody else, too. And
you know,
it was good.
That was the thing. I started to say at the beginning of the conversation, and I got distracted, as I always do, which is that Heather and I were so amazed at how well organized this was from top to bottom, including the instructions and the training that you gave everybody, Dick's Last Resort, your people, even getting, you know, you lined up for the show, your PR people were right on top of it. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's really a small staff. I mean, Lawrence Pope, right down there in Chicago, who's one of our brand stewards for Line and Kugels, has been very active with the Friends of the Chicago River, and also he coordinated with another little group that we have out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, GMR Marketing. They did all of the in-trench work and did a wonderful job where my brother John and I could come down for a leisurely canoe float and have a lot of fun with new beer consumers, and also meet the friends of the Chicago River that showed up yesterday.
And I'm betting.
And did Mike, you and Heather.
Well, thank you. We were happy to be there. You know, and I just got a text from Margaret Frisbee, who's listening. So let's say hi to Margaret, because without her and the Friends of the Chicago River, we wouldn't even be beginning to do this. And I know Rick DeMaio is here on line one, and Rick and I both know that we need to renew our subscription to Friends of the Chicago River. Right, Rick?
That's right, Mike.
Say hello to Jake Leinenkugel, Rick.
How you doing, Jake? I have, oh, my God, I think it's one of the best beers out there. It's the, what is it, the Barry Weiss?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
The Barry Weiss, when we sample people, Rick, that is the most surprising beer that they discover after they take their first sip or two. That, along, and Summer Shandy.
Yeah, the Summer Shandy is good, but what I like about the Barry Weiss is it tastes a little bit like vitamin water.
And it has protein.
I don't say that in a bad
way. Sometimes
it's like,
better,
you know,
for
after,
you.
After a nice, you know, half-hour ride on my bike or hour ride on the kayak, do I go for the vitamin water or Barry Weiss? And I picked the Barry Weiss.
Very nice, Rick.
Yeah, just
love hearing that.
Rick is our meteorologist, and he's on the show every week. And he's, as I said, he's a fan of the waterways around Chicago. He kayaks in Lake Michigan and sometimes the river, and so he gives me reports on what's going on there. And now I get to give you a report about it, Rick.
Yeah, and Mr. Leinenkugel, I graduated from the University of Wisconsin and was a building manager up at Memorial Union for my last year as a senior. And there was nothing better than every once in a while we would just we need to finish off that tap here. So we finished off the night of working, and about 4 or 5 of us sat out there at about a midnight hour and just had a nice couple of cold ones, and there's nothing better than Leinenkugel out of the tap in a frosty mug. It's the best.
And that's true. You couldn't have given a better testimonial, but thanks for being a fan, Rick. I appreciate it.
Now, I have to do one thing because they gave me this yesterday.
Oh, dear Lord.
And I didn't hear a single person use it because I doubt that even one person accidentally stuck their foot in the water. Mm-hmm. They were so organized.
It was so well
so
done.
So smooth. I mean, a couple of canoes bumped, but nothing serious. But they gave me this, and I didn't get a chance to use it, so I'm going to use it right now. Stand back.
Oh, dear. I was debating on whether or not I should take that whistle. I was. Right. They said, who wants the whistle? And I said, well, he's the host. You should have it. Now I see the error of my
But mate. I'm going to use it on the show. It's an emergency whistle. If an interview goes badly, I just start going, time out.
You know, Heather, you're the one that should have gotten the safety whistle.
I think so.
Well, Jake Leinenkugel, thank you so much for being here this morning, and thank you for the wonderful event yesterday. And I'm looking forward to the next one when you're in town again. We will
absolutely.
And when you do, give me a holler, and we will talk again on the show.
Oh, you'll be well aware of it, and thanks, guys. Thanks for being a big part of it, and just really enjoyed it. Now, Mike, what do I go to get onto your site?
Go to www.MikeNowak, MikeNowak.net.
We just got a tweet that a woman, Carrie, said thanks, and she wants us to tell you, Jake, that she's so impressed with all the work you've done and everything, she's replacing all of her husband's Miller in the fridge with Leinenkugel.
it's nice. That's not the total purpose to all of this. You guys know what it is, and the awareness factor of the river and the cleanup. We can get this thing done if a lot of other partners come into play, and this is just the start, but... we could get 5 to 10 more corporate sponsors that love rivers, love water, want to clean something up and do something right for the city of Chicago. This is it.
Absolutely. Truer words were never spoken. Jake Leinenkugel, again, go to Leinenkugel on Facebook. Like them, and money will go to the Friends of the Chicago River. You can also go to their Canoes for a Cause site. I believe we've got a link up there. It's just go to my homepage, or rather, this week's show on the Mike the Mike Novak show, MikeNowak.net. And go take a look at that, Jake. We got a video of Heather and me in the river, and I got a video of you and me talking at Dick's. It's kind of noisy, but at the very beginning especially, but you could kind of pick it up.
I'm going to do it right now, Mike.
All right,
again.
And then go back to bed.
I'm going to do stretching.
Smart man.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Jake.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Rick DeMaio is left with us on the phone. Hang on just 90 seconds, and we get to Rick and the forecast. For the week, here's a tip from the Care of Trees and Illinois Extension. Sometimes trees are unhappy, not because of insects or diseases, but because of other factors. A recent Extension Home, Yard, and Garden Pest newsletter, and you really should link on to that. I've had that on my website. Go to past shows, and you'll find out information about that. It notes that among the things that can cause stress in trees are improper planting, wrong planting zone, non-native plant species, incorrect soil type, compaction, soil pH too high or low, inadequate fertility, too much shade or sun, too wet or dry, crowded planting, construction after planting, or just not suitable for an urban setting. There's a lot that can go wrong even without insects and diseases. So the next time you think something can be solved by reaching for a spray can or a load of fertilizer, think about whether your tree is the right plant in the right place and invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look to get their opinion. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite goof-proof organic fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only 1/3 of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. consider using a pusher electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Mulorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn, even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color, even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Mulorganite for over 80 years. Use Mulorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
I want to tell you a story about the house went blue. I come home one Friday, had to tell the landlady I done lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't get the rent, and out the door I went. So I goes to the landlady.
This is going to go on for a while, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He'll get to the hook eventually.
Yeah. All right.
It's a great story song.
One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. Breakfast of Champions.
Yes.
All right. Rick DeMaio weather. Rick, you sent me a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there was a little bit of stuff to talk about.
That's okay. Let's do it real quickly. What is it going on that's exciting you?
Well, I listened to that spot you had before, the guy talking about wanting all that stuff in the morning. You know, as you said, Breakfast of Champions there. But but your earlier spot about the care for your garden and your lawn, Mike, I think is imperative to talk about, because oddly enough, even though we had quite a bit of rain across the area in the month of May and June, and in some places, even a couple of weeks ago when we had that terrible hailstorm come through, much of northern Illinois, oddly enough, has been basically rain-free. Officially at O'Hare Field, we've had no precipitation for the month of July. If you go back through the last 10 days of June, pretty much all of western sections of Cook County, Lake, McHenry, Boone, Ogle, even to Kane and Kendall County and DeKalb County, has been relatively dry. And all of a sudden you look outside and you see the lawns, you go, wow, they're looking a little stressed right now. So we can use a little bit of rain, and that's mainly due to the fact that we've had a lot of sunshine. We've had temperatures pretty much about 5 degrees above average for the first 7 days of the month of, actually the first 9 days, rather, for the month of July. So on top of the fact that we've had, excuse me, very little rainfall, a lot of sunshine and warm temperatures, all of a sudden we're in a little bit of a mini drought. So it's kind of interesting that all of a sudden we're talking about the need for rain. And I think we'll get that later on this afternoon and tonight. And some of those thunderstorms could come down in, you know, fairly, you know, heavy fashion, maybe some large hail and some gusty winds. I'll actually be working Channel 2 later on this afternoon, this evening. So if there's any cut-ins, we'll probably be able to do that and show you what's going on. It's not a tornadic situation, but definitely this time of the year, with heat and humidity, there's always a threat of some big thunderstorms. And you feel the humidity out there. All of a sudden, dew point temperature up close to 70, and heat index value is probably in the mid-90s today and probably low 90s tomorrow, but we cool right back down to Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So the summer's been, I think, good for us. We've had a fair amount of rainfall in certain areas. We've had some nice spells of heat. And overall, I still think we're going to have near-normal temperatures for the rest of the summer, but so far the first 9 days of the month of July have been pretty warm, Mike.
Well, your observation is a real good one in that it got dry, kind of, it's sneaky dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I know? It's because I'm looking at our community garden, which we keep watered, but it's in a couple of vacant lots there. It's a double lot,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't been watering the turf. And suddenly it's brown.
Right, right. And it's amazing when you said sneaky dry, it always happens that way. All of a sudden you go, wait a minute, what happened to the grass that looks brown? Because what happens is those first 2 inches of topsoil are the first really to lose their moisture. The blades of grass and your plants that have water in them will always hold on to that water a little bit longer. So it's almost like the ground or the topsoil that's drying out is kind of hidden from your eyes. So you don't really see it until next thing you know, within a day or two, that dryness extends through the base of the flowers and up through the plants and particularly your grass. And next thing you know, like I think you heard the commercial say, this is the time of the year to keep your lawn long. Keep it about a good inch and a half. These people who cut it all the way down
actually,
about a quarter
Rick,
inch or a half inch, they're just going to destroy it.
Yeah, no, keep it 3 inches tall.
Oh, 3 inches tall, okay.
Yeah, not inch and a half. That's short.
I was doing it in centigrade. You did it in Fahrenheit.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, really. As you know, here's the rule of thumb is just, you know, put your lawnmower up as high as it'll mow, and it'll keep your lawn won't burn out as quickly.
Right.
You know, it's going to maintain some of that moisture because if you keep your lawn high, it becomes its own mulch, which is kind of cool.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got you there.
Yeah, because
And I think the other thing I we were talking about earlier in our email this week was about the evaporation rate this time of the year. Is about 0.4 inch of water per day, and that'll increase. That'll go up when you get a little bit higher sun angle, or a little, I should say, longer sun period. The sun angle is about as high as it can get right now. But yeah, we can easily evaporate about 0.5 inch of water per day. So you take that over the course of the week, and you've lost 3 inches of water that you didn't get, and now you have to replenish that. So that's always a real good. I like to talk about that because that gives people some sort of indication about how much, you know, water you need to put back in the soil. The other thing we were talking about was this amazing dust storm that moved through parts of Arizona. I think everybody saw it on Tuesday. And, you know, it's not like Arizona doesn't get dust storms like the Phoenix area, but this one was one for the books. And it still is amazing to me that it seems like these weather systems that we get, and I was at a retirement party for Paul Merzlach, who was one of the lead forecasters at the National Weather Service office, retired after 30 years of service, and it was about, I guess, about 40 or 45 of us who got together. And it was a couple of conversations that I broke off to, and broke off on the side. We were talking about how the weather just has been, you know, incredibly variable, but also from a standpoint of highly visual as well. So, and I think you saw some of these videos, and then I think some people saw them as well. But it's one thing to have a dust storm move through, but it's another thing when it's 100 miles long and 2 miles high. And literally, I've never seen this before, but the Phoenix National Weather Service office actually put out a dust storm warning based on spotter reports of this wall of dust advancing westward from areas around the Tucson area to Phoenix. And this was basically a combination of the fact that you had remnants of Tropical Storm Arlene, which moved across the Bay of Campeche through Old Mexico and down into the desert southwest. And this incredibly dry air mass and extreme drought from western Texas into southern New Mexico and eastern Arizona. So you have tropical moisture in the upper levels of the atmosphere, and you have all this dryness at the surface. And when that moisture cools, evaporates, and sinks down to the ground, it literally pushes this outflow, this dense air current that picks up the dust and moves it. And that's essentially what happened. And, of course, again, when you have all these cameras around, you get to take the pictures of that, and then you kind of learn from that as well. So it's been a very exciting summer so far in many aspects, Mike.
Yeah, now, I heard something the other day from somebody, it might have been Mr. Skilling, about how it's monsoon season in the Southwest.
I did hear that, and I have to say I have to disagree with Tom. I think he jumped the gun a little bit on the monsoon season. Monsoon season usually doesn't start until about late July, early August. Was this an indication of an early beginning to the monsoon? Yes and no, but I think this is what you typically get during a monsoon season. I think oftentimes in broadcasting you want to say one thing, but something else comes out. I think that's probably what he meant. I think Tom knows better than to say that this was the beginning of the monsoon. But I think the monsoon season is still a little bit of ways away, but does it show signs that could we see something like this again in the future? When the monsoon really kicks in the next couple of weeks? Yeah, without a doubt. So I think part of that, and I think I'm guilty of that as well sometimes. You say one thing and it comes out a different way, but we're definitely getting close to that.
What, you're not perfect when you improvise, when you're extemporaneous?
Well, no, you know, that just from radio.
No kidding.
You say one thing and something else comes out. You go, I didn't mean that, but
that's...
TV is a little bit difficult because you only have, you know, 180 seconds sometimes to make everything look good.
And here, I give you all this, I won't even go into that.
Yeah, okay. I know.
You should see. I'm going to bust you a little bit. It's like,
that's right.
Last week, we just ran right up against the end of it, and you had like a 15-second forecast. That's it. And we.
You say, give me that whistle.
Yeah, exactly. That's when I go,
oh. Oh, I didn't mean for you to blow it. I just said, give it to me.
Forecast. No, that was my fault. So
No. I know we're up against the clock right now. So basically, what we're in here, what we're in for basically over the next 2 to 3 weeks is a very summer-like pattern. A couple of days of heat and humidity, a couple of days of rainfall, a couple of days of, you know, cooling with the Lake Michigan, air kind of, chilling things down into the mid-70s. And literally when you get into the summertime situation, it becomes more of a climate forecast. What do you normally get during this time of the year? What we don't see, though, is any extended period of high heat and humidity. It looks like we get 2 days of 90s, then it cools back off. We'll cool off into the 70s. Late Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, probably back into the 90s again. So,
But we're going to have some rain along the way too, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Maybe an inch and a half of rain if we get some big storms coming through here late tonight and tomorrow, but nothing like the 110 that Oklahoma City got yesterday, which I don't know how anybody goes outside at 110 degrees. That's just absurd.
Kathleen's from there, so she knows all about that,
but no
thank you. We were visiting her family down there once, and they had the week forecast, and every single day was over 105, and I just... Oh, my, get me out of here.
Yeah, well, normal high in Dallas this time of year is 95, so it's easy to get to 100. But when you're in that 110 range, you know what, Mike? It's like when we get to a high of like 5 or 10 above in the wintertime, you just don't go outside.
Right.
And that's pretty dramatic. Heat's the number one killer. So I feel sorry for all those folks about 150 to 200 miles south of us, where the summer has been a lot hotter and a lot
All right. Mr. DeMaio, we'll talk later. And in the second hour, we're going to talk actually about the weather and how it's affecting the growth of some plants. So you might want to listen to that. That comes up next on the Mike Novak Show. We'll see you next hour.
I like beer because it is good. I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you bring. I drink beer when I am sad, because the beer, it makes me glad. Now there's nothing left to say, so let's go drink beer.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! It's not! Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good!
Let's go drink some beer!
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
The more I see, the less I know.
You gonna say, did you have one or something? You got them buttons a little mixed up there, eh? I know. Only yesterday. And that was for you 21 and over folks there.
There we go. Yeah. And we got people tweeting us and Facebooking us wondering if we focused a little too much on beer yesterday and not enough on canoeing. But
No, we canoeed first. And then we drank beer after.
2 hours of paddling. And
the summer shandy, the honey weiss, and the berry weiss. It was so yummy.
In the studio for the second hour, my friend Bill Aldrich, who founded Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, is the author or co-author of 6 books. What else do you do? Do you run... companies and governments and that sort of thing. And the you book people into the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, where we get paid hundreds of dollars to do talks, right?
Yeah, well, 67 people over 9 days, and I get a budget of the big goose egg every year, and so you're not the only one who gets stiff.
Yeah. Well, know what? It's interesting, though. I think there's probably a fair number of people who don't quite understand how the Flower and Garden Show works. It's a huge undertaking. And in addition to all the displays out there, and people spend thousands of dollars putting those displays together. And then, as you say, you've got 67 speakers that you're trying to book for that. And, of course, You know, people do it. They come to speak to get exposure. That's to sell a book. To you know,
right.
just because they like talking about gardens to people.
Right. Right.
How are we looking for garden? I've got you in the studio, and I know you're not the guy who puts this together. And this past year's March garden show, the theme was sports.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that kind of worked.
Yeah.
I was kind of not. I think people.
Not mandatory. Obviously, you could see there was only about two gardens that really took the theme to
there
heart,
was a hockey one, which was our friend.
Christy Weber.
I love Christy for many reasons.
Fabulous.
And her being such a huge Hawks fan is one of them.
And hers was fun. There was a croquet one.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much people kind of lost track of it.
Sure.
So it's just suggested theme, huh?
Well, yeah, I think. You know.
I mean, I'm not trying to put you.
I'm sure the creative director would love to enforce the line, but you know, he's got to take what you know you want to design and put in your garden.
Well, but what you do is you suggest a theme that makes it easy for gardens to follow.
So next year's theme is haute couture, and so you can take that about as many ways as you might suggest.
Okay.
There.
Haute couture.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that starts March 10th of 2012.
Yep.
And, of course, people are working on it right now.
You bet.
It goes, the day you close down the garden show in March is the day you start working for next year.
Well, actually, they have the floor plan for a couple of years out, and you try and get your themes for a couple of years out so you can kind of plan for that. So,
mm-hmm.
But, yes, I mean, in theory, you're right, and the way they have restructured it, that's the way they're going to be doing it going forward. So it's kind of exciting that the director of the show for the last 5 years has been part of a company that he had to help out with other things in that company, and now all of a sudden he is doing 365 days a year for the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
And you're talking, of course, about Tony Abruscato.
The one and only.
Tell Mr. Abruscato the next time you see him, I really would like to broadcast from the show. And I know he's got other radio stations involved, so it makes it a little tricky. But, you know, how many garden programs are there on in the city?
I'll convey that, of course, as I always do. And
see,
I don't have a lot
of sway. I can see every meeting.
Awkward.
It's like Bill's hand is up. Yes, Bill. I just thought I'd mention it again. Mike really wants a broadcast from the Flower Show. Okay, Bill. Thanks. All right. Anything else here?
Exactly. I mean, you know.
It's like the meetings here at WCPT.
More awkward.
No, they're out of state, so we're semi-safe unless they're listening on the internet. They're off at the Ohio OFA, the Ohio Florist Association show in Columbus. I've been there once. It's quite a big trade show. They're off there trying to peddle the flower show to whoever they can. So
that's part of their homework. They've got to go off and look at other shows, see what the trends are, see what people are doing. In the United States, the reputation goes with Philadelphia show as being the best.
Without question.
Who's number two? I hear North Seattle has a pretty good one.
Seattle's is like 5 days, but it's supposed to be very good. I've never been to it. But Boston used to have a great one, and then they kind of went belly up. And San Francisco.
I mean, the horticultural industry is so lucrative.
I forget what their problem was, but it was something within their society that ran the show. San Francisco has quite a good one, but there are very few 9-day shows. Atlanta has a good one. There are very few 9-day shows, Philadelphia being the other one, and then us. And the problem is that Philadelphia is a week before ours, typically. Last year, we slipped up and were paralleled with them. So we were the same week, so they weren't able to get certain vendors to come to both shows. And so this year, you know, like Tony said, he's got it for, you know, the next 10 years where Philadelphia and Chicago are back to back and not overlapping. So
that's probably a good thing.
Exactly.
If you want to build your own reputation, you cannot if you have a suicide wish, you can go head-to-head with the best show in America.
Oh, exactly.
But until you build your reputation so that if you guys are back-to-back and people are coming back and go and then saying, I'm not sure which show is better, then you can go head-to-head.
Well, you go to the vendor market, you know, where you're going to buy cute tchotchkes or whatever you're going to buy, and there's not enough there to really get you excited because those people, if they have a choice, they have to go to Philadelphia where they're going to do two or three times as much business. Well, now this coming year, they're going to do something where if a company can only be at one show, they can be at Philadelphia the first week. The final 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, are overlapping with our first 2 days. So they're going to let those people come in and take a booth from midweek through the end of our show for like 4 or 5 days. And they're going to have like an artist thing on the front weekend to bring in some artists that can be in our show where the people from Philadelphia can't quite get to us yet. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see if they can make that work and get some more quality national level vendors into the show, which has always been something that we would love to, you know.
But there are two sides to look at that. And by the way, that's Bill Aldrich, and he is a friend of mine, of course. He's the founder, original publisher of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, now seminar coordinator at Chicago Flower and Garden Show, author, and there are two sides to that, as I said, which is some people think the vendors and the tchotchkes are really fun, and the other says, well, they distract from the gardens. Is there a balance you can strike?
You know, I think Festival Hall is big enough to where we can have the gardens, and then have that invisible wall, and then you have your vendors. I mean, I love to go to the vendors. I shop. I mean,
people shop there. They buy their shepherd's crooks, and they buy their seeds, and they buy bulbs, and they buy wind chimes, and they buy, you know.
There's a lady who had pressed flowers, and she had it in between glass, and they made it for wall plaques. And I bought 4 of those things. They're wonderful. And she says, oh, I'm going to Philadelphia next year, you know. And I'm going, well, come back to Chicago. You got to do us too, you know. So she's a local artist, and, you know,
she's a vendor. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you got me started here because this is the time of year when we got a lot of events going on. Heather, do me a favor, track down the Dearborn Garden Walk because I know it's real soon. And
well, while she's doing that, I would tell you that this once you told me I was coming in today, then I found out that it's the Elmhurst Garden Walk today, and so. You know, I can't miss the Elmhurst Garden Walk. So as soon as I leave here, I'll be going to Wilder Park.
I'm so sorry to put you
Elmhurst.
On double duty. Okay.
Yeah, double duty, absolutely.
Well, so if anybody at Elmhurst wants to call and plug their... I'll tell you what, anybody right now who wants to plug their garden walk, 773-838-9278, because this is a time of year you do this. I promised you earlier that we would have some gardening tips here, because the weather's been kind of weird. Yes, Heather Fry?
We got a question earlier in the show regarding watering lawns.
Okay.
Because he says that they just turn brown despite his best efforts. Is it just a lost cause? Should they continue watering? Like, what do you do?
Here's what you do with the lawn.
I know where this is going.
I saw this coming.
When in doubt, rip it out.
There you go.
It's easy. You let it go dormant. You know, and if you want to get, basically, you're supposed to give it an inch of water a year. If an inch of water in
a year?
I mean, sorry, a week. Sorry.
I was going to say, what lawn do you have? Because I haven't seen.
Tough love. that's lawn tough love. An inch of water a year. No, an inch of water. It's like a vegetable garden. You're supposed to give an inch of water a week. Well, I can tell you, Rick DeMaio talks about evaporation rates at this time of year, 0.4 inch per day. Or did he?
Yeah,
per day.
3.5 inches in a week. Yeah, that was amazing.
Now, last week, and I want to give a shout out again to Robert Neville, who was on the show from KAM Isaiah Israel, and they're doing great work growing stuff on the South Side. But last 4th of July, Monday, I drove down there and stood across from President Obama's Chicago home, which is always a trip because the Secret Service guys are there. Their congregation is right across the street from Obama's home.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's fun watching the tourists come because it's not hard to track down the address or the block. And then they show up and there's the barricades and they peek around. And the second they walk beyond the barricade, of course, the Secret Service comes by and says, you can't be here. And they go, well, we just want to look. I know you do.
Now, you still can't be here.
You still can't be here. Some people are so stupid. I'm sorry. They go to the alley and they think they're going to get in.
It's a Secret Service.
Yeah, don't worry. Secret Service won't be in the alley.
No, they're not going to surround the whole house or anything.
But see, I have Robert, who I go in with. And Rebecca Colcott was there, too. And they had extra organic. This is so cool. Organic oat straw. They had an extra bale of organic oat straw, which they donated to my community garden, Green on McLean. And I put it in the garden the next day. And you don't even mat it down. You just you lightly cover with straw your vegetable garden. And you can't believe how it holds in the moisture. So this is, you know, at this time of year, if you've got bare soil, it's all that moisture is just being sucked up, which is why you need to mulch with something. And some people use plastic and some people use leaves and some people, what do you mean? What, you're going?
Well, you're going to mulch with plastic. You're going to smother the plants.
Well, it depends on the plant. Well,
unless
you know, some people
do. Unless you're putting it in
your pathways. I suppose that, no. You, and then they grow through them.
Through the plastic?
Yeah, some people will put a hole in, you know.
Oh, well, put a hole and then put the plant through the hole.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, right, yeah, fine. That's what I'm talking about. But I love straw because it breaks down and it holds the moisture in. The change is just dramatic. I was so happy to get it because I'd been looking for straw. And then Robert donated, and it's organic. And it's this guy in Piatone who grows organic oat straw. Who does that?
Nobody, yeah.
I know. And so I'm not giving out the name because I want the connection. He probably wouldn't be able to handle all the people calling him to do that. So Robert said he might be getting another batch of it in the fall. And I said, yeah, save a bale for me. So, but that's, you know, it's really an important lesson that you learn about. I mean, I knew this already about evaporation, but to see it in the vegetable garden, putting the straw on the bare soil.
I was on the Donner's Grove Garden Walk yesterday, so I had about 300 people come through my garden, and they were just amazed at that lettuce bed out in the back. And it's a beautiful lettuce bed. And I said, yep, come back at 3:30. By God, I'm going to tear that whole bed out because it's about to go over the top.
Has anything bolted yet?
Well, it's going to start trying to bolt.
Yeah.
And you can see that it's beautiful right now. And they said, oh, it's beautiful. And I go, well, no, it's got to come out because something else has to go in. And I said, well, here's the next crop over here, my next salad crop. I took a little seed packet of mesclun, which is my favorite kind of salad green.
As opposed to the drug. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, is there a drug called mesclun?
No.
I don't know. I'm a gardener. And I sprinkle the seeds out, and I put straw on top of it. And boom, here comes the mesclun up through the straw. And now I have my next crop of salad greens ready to go. And these people were just stunned, you know. Oh, the succession
thing, and that's the way you
like,
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I just ripped out my greens for the spring too, because they were already bolting.
Yeah.
And one of the you can tell because the lettuce starts to get bitter. It's not as good as it is when it's weather's cool, nice in the spring. I think we have a phone call specifically. Oh, by the way, before I go to Bruce on line one, Bill brought in these, speaking of ripping out the greens in his garden, he brought in these fabulous bags of lettuce, just chock full. We've got some romaine and some leaf, and Heather and I are going to split this up. I wish I could show this to you, but guess what? I may soon be able to. We're thinking, and I would love your opinion on Facebook and on Twitter. We're thinking of going to video stream. In fact, we're going to be doing a test later on. We may be streaming the show next week.
Cool.
On video. And I could show you then this leaf lettuce that Bill brought in. I wonder how many of you out there think that's a good idea. Would you follow us on the stream and video? And I know, you know, 99.9 are still going to listen on radio. But I'm kind of curious what people think of that. That being said, and we were talking about garden walks, let's go to line one and bring in Bruce from, oh, guess what? He's from Downers Grove. Bruce, how are you?
Fine, Mike. It's a beautiful day here in Downers Grove. I understand through my wife, who attended yesterday the Bridges Garden Walk here in Downers Grove, that one of the featured gardens was Mr. Aldridge's garden. And I was curious, as being a participant in something like that yesterday, was there anything that he was able to draw from that experience that he might be able to apply for the future, like the Chicagoland Garden show coming up next March?
From the for a show like that for next year, probably not. But what was wonderful is to see all the different gardens. We had six different gardens, from newer construction homes that had lush lawns and then some gardens in the backyard, to mine, which is a very small space and crap all over the place, and another lady who had
you're
a
so
very
modest,
small.
Bill.
Yeah, well, you've seen my garden. You know why modesty is important there. To a lady who had a lovely small space. Older home and a small yard, and she had the quintessential 1920s garage that was leaning and single car and blah, blah, blah. She knocked down the garage and put up a shed. I had the greatest shed envy. It was so beautiful. Of course, and then the shed's only 2 years old, so it hasn't had time to accumulate everything that a garden shed always accumulates.
Well, moss should be accumulating on top, and
that's not what I mean.
Sure,
you know?
And vines should be covering it. And
I was so proud that I cleaned my greenhouse that I took a picture of the empty greenhouse before I started putting crap back into it.
You have a greenhouse?
Oh, yeah, I had a greenhouse for a long,
See,
long time.
You're so spoiled.
Well, it's a very low-tech greenhouse. It isn't a
Bruce, do you tech. Have do you have a greenhouse, Bruce?
No, we don't. We don't. We have a garden shed. Probably, if it's the garden shed I'm thinking of, which I had happened to see a couple of weeks earlier, mine is much smaller. But it does serve a purpose, a utility purpose.
Mm-hmm. What did you think? What did your wife think of the walk, Bruce?
Well, every time she goes on something like that, she comes away with some new ideas.
Mm-hmm. And which is a good or a bad thing?
Pardon?
Is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, it depends on how much it costs. It's a good thing. It really enlivens her garden, which I always have called my instant vacation. And again, I think this time she did come away with some pretty nifty ideas, one of which probably will be an enlarged garden shed.
Love it.
Yeah, I think so.
Obviously she liked Bill's garden.
Yeah, she did. She found it to be what she called eclectic, and she appreciates that kind of a garden, a wide variety of gardens she finds to be of many different people's tastes. Each in gardening, she finds that it is something where one size does not fit all. One taste is not the only way to garden, that there are so many different ways of expressing yourself in this area that she finds it to be a very enthusiastic pastime.
Well, you know, in my garden, eclectic means one of everything.
It's mine, you bet.
One of everything.
So there was one little section of the garden where, I don't know if you get graft, if the people send you plants, you know, in the spring. I got some plants from...
Please, I call that...
educational material?
Yeah, yes. Research.
Yeah, okay. Research, there
yeah,
you go.
Show prep, that's it.
Show
yeah.
prep. So some seed company sent me six plants each of six different varieties of plants this spring. And so I planted each in a separate 14-inch pot and grew them out. And then I had them all just staged yesterday, and I asked people to come by and vote for their favorite. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite, and this is my least favorite. Rank them 1 to 6.
Okay.
And so, you know, of course, there was no consensus, obviously, which is great. But, you know, they were wanting to get consumer feedback on a begonia, a dianthus, a geranium, an impatiens, a marigold, and a petunia. And I just figured everybody would come by there and just kind of snicker and say, oh, are you kidding me? But I got probably close to 200 people who filled out my little ballot
wow.
to tell me which one of these was their favorite. And it's like, you know, these guys, they spend all this time trying to get new variety names, and then there is probably not a snowball's chance that those names are going to translate over to you and me when we go shopping next spring at the garden center. It's just, is this begonia going to jump off the shelf and into our cart? You know, I mean, what?
Wait, what's the point you're making is what about the...
Well, I mean, I looked at these things and I said, well, this is a marigold. This is a big African marigold.
Oh, okay. You don't care what the name
yellow.
Of it is.
Yeah. It's you know, okay. What's different and unique about this, and if you've ever been to a trial garden, you've probably been out to Ball, you have seen geraniums until your eyeballs screw up into your head, and you say, why does the world need another geranium variety?
I have said that about coneflower for several years. Roses,
now,
that you know, they're...
Coneflowers is nothing compared to what geranium breeders do.
Well, I know. Out. I know geranium breeders and roses and... What's another one that's...
Daylily.
Daylilies. Oh. Yes, daylilies.
Some lady comes by and she goes out in my... If a plant's in my backyard, you know what I think of it. And she comes by and she says, oh, I have a thing for daylilies. I said, let me get a shovel. And she said, oh, you're not going to do that, are you? I said, of course I am. So I got out my shovel and I chopped off a piece of it. I put it in a pot. I put it in a bag. I gave it to her. She was so happy. And about 6 hours later, I looked at my pants and I leaned up against the pollen of that daylily. And I had... purple stains all the way across the front of my pants. And it's like, oh, God, I spent the whole day entertaining people with these stains all over my pants. That's
nice.
Really great.
They just felt that you probably spilled wine there.
That would probably not be a far.
See? And you're busting us for playing songs about beer on the show. Come on. Give me a break.
Not at all.
Okay, good. Bruce,
but it was nice, Bruce, that you mentioned the Bridge Communities. It's a very worthwhile organization that Garden Walk supports. It connects homeless families to a better future throughout DuPage County. And so thank you for calling.
I think a great deal of what kind of work they're doing. And this is but one effort that they have through the year that is so important in today's economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm glad you brought that up I'm sorry that we didn't get the garden walk in advance, but I'm sure people can still help out with the Bridges community, right?
Absolutely, anytime.
Bridgecommunities.org.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
All right, great. Bye-bye. Good talking to you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. We've got a friend of yours and mine on the phone that we're going to get to in just a second. We've got Samuel in Oak Lawn who's got a question about turnips. Oh, boy. And I want to give some advice because Dan and I have been talking about cucumbers and tomatoes and what's going on in the garden and something I learned this past week from the Green City Market in Lincoln Park. And again, if anybody's got questions, 773-838-9278. Dan Costa's holding on, and he's going to be with us in a second as well. And before I break here, I wanted to tell you, your friend and mine, hello, Bill, Adele Klein,
oh, wow,
is trying to get folks to enter the Garden Center's, the GCI, Garden Center's, what is it?
The show in August?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm blanking.
It's August 15 to 17, I think it is.
Yeah, but she just writes. See, she uses the acronym and then assumes I'm just going to remember.
Yeah, in the same way. Yeah.
GCI, Flower Show. Okay, well.
The Garden Center Industry Show, I don't know what
I think it's called. Oh, I can't remember.
No, I can't either.
We'll look it up. Look up GCI for me, Heather, if you would. You can enter horticulture, but you have to be a member of an Illinois Garden Club to enter the design classes. They're having Our Beautiful Earth. It's a competitive flower show. Okay, this is different, actually. This is at the Chicago Botanic Garden, Saturday,
there
August 6th, Sunday, August 7th.
There you go. That's better.
I still don't know what GCI stands for.
Garden Clubs of Illinois. Thank you.
Of course it does. That makes sense. Six design classes. Don't expect me to
when you said garden centers, I'm going, well, what about garden centers?
Well, I was thinking, I had in my head because in
Adele
August
is
also,
with the Garden Clubs of Illinois.
That's true. But I got confused because I thought about August is also the time when the independent IGC.
IGC, thank you. That's better.
We have GCI and IGC. Independent Garden Centers. That also comes to, and I saw that and I inverted it. Sorry, Adele. But I'll give her a chance to make good on this later. Anyway, Botanic Garden, August 6th, Sunday, August 7th. Design classes, 72 entries to fill, over 100 classes of horticulture exhibits of annuals, perennials, vines, grasses, branches, containers, houseplants, and more. And there are going to be educational exhibits on reuse, recycling, rain barrels, and soil. photography, something for everyone. And the show hours are going to be 5 p.m. Saturday to 10 a.m. Or, I mean, sorry, 5 p.m.
No.
From noon to 5 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Sunday.
That's better.
Do you want to do this?
No.
The admission, no admission fee for the show. Parking free for members, $20 for non-members. That's at the Chicago Botanic Garden. And I'll have this up on my website soon, but you can call Adele for information at 846-446-7086. So this is if you're a gardener and you want to exhibit stuff, this is something you should take advantage of. All right. Dan Costa from Prairie State Bonsai Society and from Vern Goer's Greenhouse coming up next. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Get back to nature with compost from Back to Nature. Back to Nature's products have earned the United States Composting Council stamp of approval, like their cotton burr compost, which is rich in protein, the primary food source for those organisms that convert nutrients into a form that plants can use. Back to Nature's cotton burr compost is made up of composted cotton burrs, of course, which are a byproduct of the ginning process, and it's 100% organic. It also accepts and retains moisture like a champ, unlike peat moss. Back to Nature has been composting since 1979, and they are the largest producers of composted cotton burrs in the southwestern United States. Find out more about cotton burr compost and other fine products from Back to Nature at backtonaturecompost.com. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and I both love them, so give them a try. Back to Nature products are available at Castle Gardens in Volo in Richmond, Bob's Salt and Feed in West Chicago, Wheaton Nursery in Wheaton, Illinois. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Well, that's an awfully nice compliment, Mr. Aldrich.
Or Waldrip, as you normally call me.
Well... Yeah, well, because I would write to him, and his email address was Waldrich, W. Aldrich, at ChicagolandGardening.com. So I just called him Mr. Waldrip. It just seemed to work.
Thanks. And I still sent you a check,
are you looking for
I?
A columnist for the back of your magazine?
All right. Well, you know what? This is the time for me to – let me do this. We're getting into the dog days of summer, which can also be the dry days. As you found out from Rick DeMaio today on the show, except if you live in Indiana, but even they are going to dry up. It's weird. You got to keep track of stuff. That's gardening, which is why you need a copy of the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's a story on rain barrels and how to use them properly, which might keep your garden from melting one of these hot July days. Any gardener loves flowers, but Beth Botts writes a story on how containers that feature foliage just might hang on to their appeal longer. On the other hand, we love those blooming shrubs. Deb Terrill walks you through the latest in beauty bush, hydrangeas, bottle brush, buckeye, and rose of Sharon. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It's not exactly like a bloom or even foliage. It's kind of like the hose that you left on your lawn after watering, and it kills all the grass in the shape of the hose. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but if you want to know what's happening in your Zone 5 garden, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600. The man who started the magazine is sitting across from me right now. 888-265-3600 or go to ChicagolandGardening.com. And you're waving an issue there, Mr. Waldrip.
It's wonderful. This is, I'm your biggest fan, but I mean this column is just off the charts. It's just
really
fabulous. And if you at the end of the year, whenever we did this, at the end of the year there was no money. I mean, beyond no money in the coffers. And so that would be the time when you have to enter things to win prizes. And it was just like, we have such a nice magazine and I could never enter contests.
Well, so, you did occasionally, so, and usually they
Well,
went someplace else.
We know the Merlot stain we remember that one. you know, if we get to the end of this year and you don't have any money to enter this in the contest, make sure you send me I will enter this one for you.
No.
Because
Bill,
it is fabulous.
You're wrong. Bill is talking about the column in the latest issue, July, August, and that is it's based on a true story.
I don't believe that, but that's okay.
It's absolutely true. She wrote half the this. My friend of mine said, my nine-year-old daughter, and Heather knows this story. It is true. A friend of mine said, my nine-year-old daughter wrote an essay for school. And as a matter of fact, I'm just going to bring Dan Costa in here for a second. Sam, hold on a second. We will get to you.
Okay.
And Dan, good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
This friend of mine sent me an email, said, my daughter was required to write an essay for school, and she decided that she was going to follow your lead. She loves your column, and she was basing her story, well, she was doing it in your style. And he described it as kind of stream of consciousness and sort of loosey-goosey with spelling and punctuation. And she did this and got an F. The teacher did not get it at all. And I said, you got to send me that essay. I want to see this. So he sends me the essay, and I looked at it and went, hey, that's half my column for July, August. It's right there. So I took that, and I wrote, I kind of critiqued her essay, which was based on my style, and Allison Hunter, who does my wonderful illustrations, came up with this beautiful drawing, which is of this little girl wearing a T-shirt that says F is for famous, because I just made her kind of, you know, famous to people who have Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And I'm sure her teacher hates me right now. But you say, Bill, that you think that people
That's
would...
That's wonderful.
You know what? The people who write National Gardening Magazines are going to look at that and say, what does that have to do with gardening?
I am the chair, the incoming chair of the awards committee of the Garden Writers Association, because somebody who you and I happen to know couldn't find somebody to follow her as the chair of the awards committee of the Garden Writers Association, Miss Botts, and so she dragged me kicking and screaming into that. But it's wonderful. I mean, there's
wealth. Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't think that anybody will find it that wonderful because, you know, I've stopped entering those contests.
Well, I know I will provide the entry fee for you so you enter this one.
Because, I don't think most of the garden writers who judge these things have any clue as to what I'm doing.
I judged this year, but of course I judge photography, so see, I wouldn't have been able to help you.
That wouldn't have helped there. Dan Costa is on the line, I will get to the Prairie State Bonsai in just a second, Dan. But let's talk some garden stuff because I'm going to talk some vegetables, and let's start right now. By the way, Dan is from Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale, and he calls all the time the show to correct me on things. But he's also nice to me. Samuel's in Oak Lawn. Samuel, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You got a question about turnips?
Yeah. You know, the leaves are supposed to be edible. Is that the thing that they can be like beet leaves where you don't have to cook them, or that's...
Bill is his face is contorted. I have a feeling he's not a fan of turnip leaves. What about you, Dan?
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, okay. He's wondering. Samuel is wondering if turnip leaves are edible like beet leaves are. Whether you need to actually cook them first, or you can eat them raw.
I've known people to eat them raw, but you have to have the very youngest leaves in the center,
right?
Not the outer. Fully developed ones.
But that's kind of the case with a lot of leafies. I mean, we grew collards back here. And it's the first time, I have to admit, first time I've grown collards in the parking lot here at WCPT. And I thought they were wonderful. Some people say you should prepare those. Mm-hmm. I ate them raw. I thought they were great.
Yeah, you can throw a few of the turnips into the salad, or you can cook them as green, like spinach or Swiss chard would be cooked.
So, I guess, Samuel, I guess the answer is it depends on your taste.
Right. And the storages, as far as keeping them, would that be in a refrigerator like a carrot or beet or a potato where it's not refrigerated?
Dan, how do you store your turnips?
Never grew them.
Oh! See, and that's the other thing.
Well, I think the storage is, why would you store it? I mean, you go out at 6 o'clock, you snip off a few leaves, you come in and you eat them. I mean, I can't imagine.
The root, eventually.
The root. Okay, well, that's, yeah, that's more of a, you can save that for winter, so.
In a refrigerator or without?
Let's do a quick look here.
Yeah, I think you would need to provide some, a cool space for it, but.
Give me just a couple of seconds, and I will put Heather on it, and we'll do a little turnip storage investigation for you, Samuel, okay?
Right, and if you stream, is there going to be like a podcast where you can get it during the week?
Well, it depends on whether I record the video stream. What I'm thinking of doing is streaming the video live while I'm on the show. If I record it, then I could post it on the website, and you can see the video later.
Because I got to go to the library.
To see a video. You know, you might want to just listen on the radio. I'm not sure you want to actually look at me, you know, that, but I'm just suggesting that some people might. Of course, Heather realizes that she's going to have to, you know, get
I'm looking for turnips. What?
Oh, never mind. We'll get to that. Samuel, thank you for calling.
Right, I'll listen for the answer.
Thanks
again. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I want to get, we'll get to the, see if we can, did you get the storage, find something there?
They just said, that one mentioned something about freezing them, but I'm looking some more.
Yeah. But I wanted to get something that you and I talked about, Dan.
Yeah.
And that is, last week I was talking about squashes.
Mm-hmm.
And how they got beat up by the hailstorm. Mine did in my community. Oh, yeah, they really took a whacking.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, you send me an email, and the subject line was, toss the squash.
Yes. And I think the best thing for you to do is get rid of those plants completely and then put some seed in, like, well, this week if at the latest, really. But if you plant your seeds, I always put them in about the 4th of July, the zucchini seeds and squash seeds, because the borer that a lot of people are plagued with, the female is out laying her eggs in June. And so if you have your plants out there, she finds them, inserts the egg, and then you end up with squash borer that ends up killing your plant. If you plant your seed about the 4th of July is the date I always use for a marker, those moths are gone by then, the borers are gone by then, and so your plants will germinate, seeds will germinate very quickly in the warm soil. The plants will grow really quick as well. You'll get plenty of zucchini or whatever the squash you're growing, and you will not get any problems with squash vine borers anymore.
And that's a way you outwit insects. And, you know, people think that the only way you can beat an insect is you get a spray, you apply something. But really, the most important thing is to understand their life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about squashes? If we still have them there, they did not get the borer, we shouldn't have a problem, should we?
No. They could possibly grow on. But you really wouldn't be seeing too much of the borer damage as yet. So you really don't know if it's in there.
One of the things we've been dealing with, though, is some of our summer squashes, I think it's blossom end rot, because they set the fruit and then it gets, it starts to collapse on itself, gets brown, and I'm pretty sure it's blossom end rot, which is a watering problem, and I'm hoping now that we have the mulch,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's going to really mitigate that.
Yeah, get them lifted up off of the wet soil.
Uh-huh.
And that will help to prevent that kind of thing.
Now, the most interesting thing I found out this week was we talked last week about cucumbers. And some of them started, you know, I talked to Robert Neville, and he was here, and Amanda Joy from the Peterson Garden Project was here, and we were talking about some cucumbers are very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And the plants, not the fruit.
Yes.
And we've had some of that in our yard, or in our community garden, rather. And Kathleen went with our friend Mac to Green City Market and talked to an organic farmer there. And she said, oh, yeah, we were dealing with that on the farm. Really? Well, what did you do? She said, well, here's what happened. We've had all this fluctuation in temperatures. And the point at which the cucumber plants were leafing out was very cool. And they got confused. You know, their growth slowed. And mm-hmm. then it got hot. And they went, oh, it's time to produce fruit. Problem is, the plants weren't very big. And they really couldn't sustain all that fruit with the vines that they had.
Yeah.
So what mm-hmm. this farmer said she did is she gave them a jolt of nitrogen, which she loves fish fertilizer, which she put down double strength. And she said, you know, you might do it in a week after that as well and get those plants, you know, give them a kickstart
mm-hmm. yeah,
to get them going. And it occurs to me that maybe other plants got fooled like that, too. You and I have talked about tomatoes, and some people have said, oh, my tomatoes are really small. The fruit doesn't mm-hmm. look good. Bill, are you having Bill, you're shaking your head.
No, I love it. That's a wonderful things to say. I mean, I you know, cucumbers to me are kind of like a weed, and so you know, that's a great tip for them. But Dan, in terms of succession crops, would cucumbers be another candidate for a succession crop like a zucchini?
Oh, you could still put them in. There'd be no problem planting seeds at this point.
Well, last year we had wonderful cucumbers. That was one of the few plants that I did well with. My squashes were non-existent, but my mm-hmm. cucumbers were awesome.
They're relatives, actually. They're in the same family.
Yeah, cucurbits, right?
Mm-hmm. And they have the same. They're both tropical plants, just like beans or corn or peppers or tomatoes, you know. And so all those things like warm weather. And that's part of the problem that people had this year with their tomatoes and their peppers is, you know, at the greenhouse, we're having people buying tomatoes in early May and planting them out. And then they come back and they don't know what's the problem. You know, the plants are not growing. They're not growing right. And even right up till now, they're telling me, you know, about how their plants are doing poorly. And a lot of these people planted them so early that we got the cold snaps, and it really knocks those plants back. So they get out of their growing rhythm, basically. And they don't recover from that, and it really stunts the plants for later in the season. So I always plant my vegetables around Memorial Day when I'm sure that it's going to be warm enough. If you plant too early, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I beat up on people. I warn them constantly on this show when we're in April and May, say, hey, you know, do it at your own risk. Now, mm-hmm. if you've got a hoop house or some sort of covering that you can keep them warm during cold spells, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. And I've somebody else wrote today, let me see if I can find it, because I think it was on the Facebook here, and it was about tomatoes and dealing with whiteflies and other things.
Oops.
Have you seen that at all this year, Dan?
White flies is a little early for those. We usually start in August
and
that.
Yeah.
But right now the biggest problem I'm getting in is verticillium wilt on tomatoes.
Mm.
Getting at least one person a week bringing me some yellow leaves. And, you know, it's yellowing starting from the bottom of the plant, yes. Is it progressing up? Yes. And verticillium is very active this year, it seems.
Wow.
And I think in part it might be because of the popularity of the heirloom tomatoes, because they have no resistance. You know, they were never bred for that. And some of the more modern hybrids are resistant. If you're having a problem with verticillium, the best thing to do is to go with resistant hybrids, because it's a native fungus. It's in our soil naturally. I've been told it can live without a host for 20 years. Which seems long, but it's possible.
Well, you know, I lost a smoke bush to verticillium wilt in my yard.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, and a lot of people love smoke bushes. I can't plant it in my yard because I know I've got verticillium wilt there, and it will persist for a long time, and I'm better off getting a plant that is resistant to it.
Yeah, my smoke bush turned into a Cornelian cherry dogwood.
Funny how that works. That's Dan Costa. He's from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. We've got the answer for Samuel, who called earlier, turnips should be stored unwashed in a plastic bag in the refrigerator. Now, it says here for up to 2 weeks.
Oof.
If tops are attached at the time of purchase, remove them. Purchase? Huh, come on. We're growing them. Remove them and store them wrapped in a damp paper towel or plastic bag in the crisper drawer of the refrigerator. But that still doesn't really address freezing them and whether we want. So we will continue to track that. And I'm like Dan, and I guess like Bill, I've never grown turnips.
Well, I'm sure you'll have to parboil them or something and then freeze them after you cook them slightly.
Yeah.
Probably cut them up and blanch
right.
them.
Exactly.
So I found that email, and it was, or rather, a Facebook message. It was, and this woman got the seeds from Voluntary in Kilbourne Park, so they're organic, and it was the tomatoes. She said they're sitting there, or is it the, wait a second, is it Cukes? I don't know whether she's referring to the Cukes or the tomatoes, but she said they're just sitting there and not growing. I placed them, but yeah, I think it's the Cukes. I placed them by my leeks and thought that maybe they don't like leeks, but maybe they don't like the weather, is what we're yeah. telling you. The tomatoes are stressing too. She says white flies. It's probably something else, Karen, and borderline leaf wilt. Caught it early. Looks like they're getting back to vigorous leaves. So, you know, some of these plants are bouncing back, but the weather was crazy yeah. earlier. But I have another woman write. Arlene Gould says, actually, my Cukes look better than ever. I wonder where you live, Arlene. But she says she used, they didn't plant till June 1st. Mm-hmm. See? And there's that difference.
Yeah, you plant into that warm soil and the plants take off and they're not set back by any cold snaps. So they go straight through. They're much stronger that way and produce more. Early planting is never a good idea.
And Arlene actually writes, she said, we planted June 1st this year, and puts in parentheses, kind of late. No, Arlene.
Right on time.
You were right on time, and this is the problem we get. All right, well, listen, I gotta break for a second. So that's Dan Costa from Vern Goers. Bill Aldrich is in the studio. You guys hang on for a second.
And Prairie State Bonsai Society.
And we're getting to the bonsai. I know, no, that's why you're here. So hang on for just a second. Well, summer's here. And if you've been waiting for the big sales to put the finishing touches on your summer garden, look no further than SIDS. During their summer dot sale clearance through July 16th, you can save 30 to 70% off a great selection of items as they clear out spring and summer merchandise. Here's some of the examples. 30% off all arbors, trellises, statuary, fountains, gazing balls, annuals, rose bushes, pine and spruce trees, and more. 50% off all ornamental grasses, annual flats, outdoor canvas art, seed starting, and light gardening supplies, and more. 70% off all remaining fruit trees, lotus bird feeders and houses, select perennials, and nursery stock, and more. The selection of items varies by store. It's limited to stock on hand. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard and on the web at SIDSonline.com. Remember, too, that as you're cleaning up around the garage and shed, scoop up all those plastic pots, trays, and cell packs and bring them to SIDS for recycling.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer, as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees in Illinois Extension. Sometimes trees are unhappy not because of... Oh, no. Wait. Were we there?
Yes,
we did that. Did SIDS... Here's the other string.
There it is.
The Care of Trees. Mowers, string trimmers, and other lawn care equipment can help create a well-manicured lawn, but they can wreak havoc on trees. Any kind of equipment carelessly used, even hand tools, can cause trunk wounds. These can lead to disease, insect damage, and even death of the tree. Young trees of all types and thin bark trees such as birches and maples are more susceptible to trunk damage than those with more rugged and thick bark like like Elms, Oaks, and Ashes. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Sustainable food fundamentals. Growing good food that's good for the earth.
Catch a Tory Dory.
I'm kind of late on that, but that's been pretty much the conversation we've been having about the vegetables and stuff. Now you're on stage here, Dan Costa, because you've got the Prairie State Bonsai Society coming up next week at the Morton Arboretum.
Right. We'll be at Morton Arboretum on Saturday and Sunday. We're in the special events area, which is right in the visitor center, so when you come in from the parking lot, you will find us quite easily. We're 10 in the morning till 6 on Saturday and 10 in the morning till 4 on Sunday. We'll have a display of members' trees. Usually we get about 60 trees or so brought in for the show, which we display up on the tables inside the nice air-conditioned room. You're welcome to come through and view our trees, enjoy them. And then you'll also be handed a ballot to pick your favorite tree, and whichever tree wins as the people's choice, the owner of that tree gets a little trophy, and a picture of the tree is put on our club's homepage for the next year. So it's kind of a nice little honor. We'll have demonstrations going on both days, at least one and maybe two per day. I know I'm doing one on Sunday about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so if you want to come out and see me work on a bonsai stock material and start the training process on the tree, you can watch how that's done. We have vendors that are going to be selling trees and pots and tools and all the supplies and everything, and workshops going on. You have to pre-register for the workshops through the Morton Arboretum, but we have 6 of those. I'm doing one on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on Dawn Redwoods. And we also have 2 that are available for children, both one on Saturday and one on Sunday morning.
That's right.
We have one of our visiting masters going to be doing a couple of workshops as well. So that'll be nice. And it's a really good, you know, if you go to the home center and you see the little juniper in the little plastic pot and you think that's what bonsai is, it definitely isn't.
No.
That's the really poor commercial grade.
I've already killed a bonsai juniper, so I know that that isn't it. But I'm learning. I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at it myself, and you might convert me. Before I let you, you know, I want to let everybody know that all that information is on my website, MikeNovak.net. This week's show, you have the link to the Prairie State Bonsai and the Morton Arboretum, and you can register, and I advise people to go. I wanted to do two real quick things before I let you go, Dan. John from Harvard, Illinois, wanted to know about using Trimec. We can't get into it right now. I know he probably wants to kill Creeping Charlie in the lawn. Mm-hmm. I would be the guy who says, don't do it. I'll teach you how to do it culturally. You might be the guy who says, I'll tell you how to mix it. So, you know, it's you and I will both answer his question. The other is, if you go to my Facebook page, The Mike Novak Show, there's this controversy in Oak Park, Michigan, about a woman who tried to grow vegetables in her front yard. I was going to talk about it today, and, of course, ran out of time. These people are crazy. They're trying to do what happened in Northbrook, so...
Yeah.
But go there and comment on it, because we need to talk about this. They're going to put her in jail for growing vegetables.
Oh, great.
Bill Aldrich, thank you for being here. Dan Costa, hey, Heather, go green
or go home.